Welcome to Dot Game. This is part two of our basic navigation series. I think I've probably called it something different every video, but part two of the basics of navigation. In this one, we'll actually take a look at the obstacles, so working with NavMesh obstacles. And then we'll dive into a little bit more of the code, I think, and then we'll set up a sprite to pulse. So we'll do a little bit of animation, very, very light, kind of basic intro-y stuff. So let's go ahead and get started. We have the scene pretty much exactly where we left off in the last video. And in the last one, if you recall, we set up the navigation. We made it so that our character could navigate based off of where we clicked, but there's really no visual indication of where we're clicking. And then the other problem is it doesn't actually avoid obstacles. So we'll just kind of go through anything and everything, which is obviously pretty bad. So that's the first thing that we're going to actually address, which is setting up what's known as a NavMesh obstacle on our game object. So looking at our well, which is going to be our first one that we want to play around with, we'll add it. So NavMesh obstacle. And these are pretty easy to work with. So it's shaped as a box. What we're actually wanting is a capsule. And we're going to want something with a little bit bigger of a radius. So the NavMesh obstacle is very similar in the sense of the radius and the height to the NavMesh agent that we looked at earlier. It does have several other properties that we didn't really look at. You notice there's actually a center, so we can alter where it's positioned along either X, Y, or Z. In our case, it was actually positioned perfectly, because what I want is to cut out a circle around this, but not kind of the bottom half that you see here. So having it sit at 0, 0, 0 is actually absolutely what we want. And I think the radius might even be able to, oops, that's the wrong one. Radius. I think we could probably bring it in just a bit too. I feel like that's probably pretty good. All right, so the last kind of property that is different and not really self-explanatory is this whole carve thing. So I'm going to click on navigation. That's one way. So we can kind of see we have that blue area. We still have a blue area around where we've defined an obstacle. And this can be altered by checking the carve. Now you can see that there's actually a carve that's being cut out in that navigation. So what that is doing is when carving is not turned on, the agent will try to steer to prevent a collision, which is really good behavior for, say, a movable obstacle that you'd want. So we might do that maybe on our little crate over here. But we wouldn't want them to potentially move the well. That would be pretty bad. So with carving turned on, the obstacle essentially becomes static or stationary. And the agent, when they go to plan their route, will plan around that particular object. So that is very, very useful, again, when you want to do some blocking. Again, in our case, to make sure that they don't walk through the well, but you could think of that also in, say, a hallway or something where maybe you want to block off the player from being able to progress down that hallway until they've met some other criteria, and then that object will magically be, you know, removed or explode or whatever. Actually, exploding is a very bad example because I think you actually would end up doing that a whole different way. So ignore that part of it. But the point being, when you're trying to avoid a particular area or stop the player from going. So that's kind of really all there is to setting this up. So if I hit push play and then I try to navigate through it, again, this is with that NavMesh obstacle, you can see she kind of dodges it. She didn't get perfectly around it, but that's because I had my radius rather slow. But she won't walk on it. She'll just kind of path around it, which is perfect. So that's kind of the basics of setting up the obstacle. Now let's take a look at the sprite. There we go, or the sprite stuff. So I'm gonna get off of navigation just to make this feel a little bit more complete. We're gonna do another prefab. Not emergent. We'll call this position indicator. All right, so we're going to create an empty game object. And we'll name this, I guess, position indicator. Then I'm going to add a component. And this is going to be a sprite renderer component. And I'm going to look for circle, which isn't here. And I think that's just because it's listed as a texture. So I've already imported in this sprite called circle. And if I change its texture type over to a sprite, and then I hit apply, we'll actually see that it really is a circle. So Unity was processing it as a texture. It's actually a sprite, which is what we need for this. So coming back over to our sprite renderer, which is a component, obviously, we'll pick our circle. We can kind of see it now. And I did a white circle because it's kind of a handy trick. So if you have a sprite that maybe you want to apply different coloring to, if you have it white, then really you can kind of apply any raw color to it, which is very handy. Technically not needed in this, but it gets the job done. That's okay. And I wasn't really sure what color I'd wanted originally. All right, so I'm going to do the same thing that I do before. I'm going to put you back over to, or put it back over to 0, 0, just to kind of reset it, and I'm going to bring it up a little bit so we can look at it. I'm actually going to need to rotate it. So when the player goes to click, obviously we don't want it popping up like that. We want it to look like it's flat on the ground. So we'll change the rotation to be negative 90, and then the position so is actually going to be about 0.1. And the reason I'm setting the position at 0.1, so again, bringing this over here, I don't want to run the risk of it of that basically happening because it's on the same kind of axis. So if I do 0.1, it guarantees that it's slightly above the ground, and we won't run into any of that weird kind of funkiness. And then the other thing is, I kind of want to bring the scale down, and we're going to pulse it up to probably about 0.75 or 1, and I don't know which one's going to look better, but we'll pulse it up a bit and then bring it back down to this size. I think that kind of sets it up. So I'm going to put that back to 0, 0, and then I'm going to add what's known as an animator component. And what this is going to let us do is create an animator controller and ultimately control the animations that would be tied to this indicator. So underneath the position indicator folder in the prefabs, I'm going to create a new one of the animator controllers. And I'm just going to call this position indicator controller. And then coming back over to this, I could either click this little object here to pull it up. Really not sure why this window is not quite so large, driving me bonkers, so. Or you can drag and drop. See? Everything else is about what we want, so I'm going to leave all of that alone. So coming over to this animator tab, if I right-click, I can create a new state this way. Alternately, with this game object selected, I can go from this route. So I can click create, and then go to our prefabs position indicator. And I'm just going to create, I don't know, we'll call it idle, because it's going to pulse up and down. So when I created this, a couple of things happened. The first thing that happened was this top bar turned, these little icons turned red. And then, technically, I guess that did too. And then on this side, we have a new kind of node item on this, if you will, titled idle. And you'll see that it's orange. That means that it's the default animation that will occur. So the second that this game object is available in the game, it'll automatically start to run this particular animation. We won't see anything because we haven't actually animated anything, but we know that it's at least there. So coming back over to the animation tab, if I click on the right thing, which would be position indicator, I can add properties to it. So you notice here, we're no longer red. It's because we're no longer doing what's considered recording. So this little red button right here is basically the recording button, and that's what triggered this certain stuff to turn red. And what that means is it's basically paying attention to things that you do. So if we move it, it added some movements and it added a keyframe to it. So we don't actually want to move it, we're going to want to scale it. So if I keep that scaled and then I do really technically, I want to keep everything at 0.5 to start. I can see that this got recorded. If you select on these and then you hit the period button, you can actually move forward a couple of frames. So let's think, what do we want this to be? So I guess add about, we'll do 20. 20 frames, we'll go up to 7.5. I don't know if this is going to look good, so we might have to tweak it. I'm just going to bring it over here. I'll delete it. Actually, it won't record. So, you can see it kind of pulsed through. I'm going to turn off recording. I actually am not a fan of doing the recording stuff. I just prefer to enter my values in raw. I just find that I tend to have really weird stuff whenever I record, but, and I'm guessing that's just totally user error. Okay, so basically what I've done is I've set it up so that we start out at 0.5 scale, we go up to 0.75, and then at frame 40, we will come back down to 0.5, which will basically look roughly like this. The other thing that we're going to want to do, so this is where I say that technically this design is probably not the best that you'd want to do, but it illustrates a couple of points. So you want to be thoughtful when you destroy game objects. So if you're going to have something that maybe you're using continuously, it might make more sense to deactivate it versus destroying it altogether. In this case, we're going to destroy it altogether because that can still be a very, very handy method to do. So what I want to actually have happen is it's going to scale up and down, which we've already seen. And then at the end of that, it's actually going to start fading the visibility down to nothing. And then a few seconds after that, the object itself will be destroyed. So we're going to have it fade a few seconds after it finishes pulsing. So what you can do is you can mess with the alpha of a color. So I'm going to go ahead and set this to be just a little bit weird, but I'll set this to be 0. And we can see on the screen that it kind of disappeared or faded away, I guess, if you will. What I really want to do is actually have this be R1. And this one should be a 1, too, which is perfect. And then I'm going to go about 5 frames in. I'm going to set this to be 0. Oops. All right, so that should do it. So if I push play, you can kind of see a little bit. We'll go a little slower. We'll go like keyframe by keyframe, but you can kind of see it starts to fade out at that point, which is what we want. So we're going to have it fade out pretty quick. Let's actually bump it up a bit. And then we're just going to destroy the game object, so it doesn't really matter. But I'll at least leave a little bit more gracefully. Okay, so unchecking that. That is our animation, I think, that we want. So if I push play, we should just see it. We see it kind of repeating on a loop, right? Does it, it fades out, but then it pops back up. And that's really not what we want. We don't want it to appear right after. So having that shut off, if you come into the animator controller and you double click on your animation, you get loop time. So if you uncheck this, that'll actually stop the looping of the animation. So pushing play again, we see that it ran and then it disappeared. You can also see here that it ran and then it stopped at the end. And if it was on a loop, it would have kind of restarted and kept running. So this is a very handy window also for kind of debugging what's going on with your stuff. So that, I think, is really kind of all we need to do to set up the indicator. I'm going to turn it into a prefab just because we're going to, the way that we're going to do it, we're going to destroy it and recreate a new one, so we don't really need that. And then under our player, on our script, we're actually going to add a little bit more to build up on this. So, I did not follow my normal formatting convention, but that's okay. So, I'll do game object. So, we're going to have a new game object, a public one for the position indicator, and I'll show you how you can work a little bit with the inspector. And the inspector is actually very handy to use. So we'll do the position indicator, and then we're going to do inside of our raycast. So inside of this, if we've hit something, we want the game object, or really the position indicator, to appear in that spot. So where we know we hit something is here. And so we'll do game object. And technically, real quick, for the record, you would probably want to fine-tune this a bit, because this will trigger on any game object that has a collider, which is fine for our game. But if you have, because we don't have, we're not really expecting people to click on things without colliders, and we haven't really built it up. Eventually, we'll probably have to revisit this. But what you could see happening is you'll have this raycast hit or succeed, but it might not be a navigation mesh, or it might not be a good point for that to go to. So that's where you can kind of work with layers to get this to be a little bit more detailed. And like I said, at this point, we really don't need to, but that is an option and something to be aware of that you can run into. So what I'm going to do is, you know, we're going to, again, operate on the notion that anytime this ever happens, the ground has been what's clicked, so we're good. And then I'm going to instantiate a instance of this prefab. So I am not instantiating the prefab itself, but an instance of it. And that's very important to remember, that kind of difference. So I'm going to tell it where we want it. So it's hitpoint.x. We want, so the reason I'm not just providing hit point is because we want the y-axis to be 0.1 float, which is what we had originally set. That was 0.01, which is what we had originally set it in our prefab, which I guess technically doesn't really matter, but it helps my peace of mind, I guess. And then we're going to just provide it with the rotation. So we're going to do a quaternion, and then a Euler, and then we're going to do the 90 degree F. So it's basically that same stuff that we had set in the inspector is kind of how we want this to show up. The main difference being the X and Y, or X and, Z location are going to be based off of wherever our raycast actually hit. So if we push play, almost made a mistake. So before we push play, you can see over in movement controller that now we have this position indicator game object. And actually, I am going to push play, because it's probably a good error to see. So if we push play, and then I click, it gets an error. So unassigned reference exception. Basically, what that is saying is we didn't actually tell it what this is. So you could either do that in code, or if you want to use the inspector, you can just take the position indicator, so the game object we want to work with, and then drag it there. And when I push play again, and I click, we can kind of see that it's there. What's interesting is in our hierarchy, we see it there, it continues to be there, and now we have another one, and another one, right? So our hierarchy, the more that a player clicks, could get a little bit insane. So it depends on the behavior that you want. So like I said, the behavior we're going to do is where we're just going to destroy these after a while. You could technically keep the same one and just move it every single time. So you have it kind of fade out, and then when the person clicks, it adjusts its position. I'm just thinking about how I would rewrite that. So so you can do a lot of pretty neat stuff depending on what you want. But you can see, like, this is definitely not what we want. We want either a managed version of these so that we always have a set amount, or we want to actually destroy them, but we certainly don't want it to continue to create and exist. So we're going to destroy, and the easiest way for us to do that is to create another script, and on this script we'll call this just position indicator. Oops, I think I spelled that wrong. Whatever, we'll just pretend that no, that's gonna bug me. Position indicator. I did it again. There we go. So one thing when you're renaming your scripts is you have to make sure that the name of the script actually matches. So in this case, they don't. Reload all. All right. Otherwise, when Unity goes to do some compiling, you'll run into issues. So with that there, really all we want to do, so we don't need update. I'm just going to invoke a method. So I'm going to say after a certain period of time, call this method. And all that method is going to do is destroy the object. So we'll call it delay destroy. And then we'll do destroy. Not sure where my IntelliSense went, but that's all right. Invoke. So when you invoke, actually, I'll copy this so I don't. You provide it with the method that you want to invoke and then the time that you want to wait to invoke it. So in this case, we're going to wait 3 seconds essentially, and then we'll invoke the delay destroy, and then that'll be that. So the last thing to do, oh, it created a new one. How interesting. I have never seen this happen. I think I'm also crashing. I think with how I did it, Unity must have tried to save it differently. And it's never tried to do that before. We will get rid of, we'll keep our bad one, I guess. Movement controller. Yes, I will try to do a rename again. I'll just do it inside of Visual Studio. This is how I normally do it. I normally wouldn't have jumped into Unity. Okay, let's see if that fixed our... Okay, I'm going to have to look that up after and see what I did that triggered it. Okay, so if I... So if I just take the script, I'm going to drag and drop it on our position indicator. Hit play. You can see here, it disappears. So we can kind of do that same thing where we put a whole bunch, and then we should see them start to destroy themselves after a while. So that is it for our basics of networking, part two. Again, probably like the fifth different name that I've given it. Like I said, we're going to dive into this a little bit more. I want to do some stuff with the off-link meshes and then some more advanced movement. So at some point we will come back and revisit this topic. So thanks for watching, guys.